Call the House Resources Committee to order. In attendance, we have Representative Elkins, Seaton, Samuels, Ramos, and Gatto. For us today will be the continuation of discussion of House Bill 498. And if I could get a motion to adopt the S version, the work draft.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the work draft 24-LS1817/S.
Is there any objection to that?
You may not have to do that.
Hearing none, we have the S version in front of us. We tried to take the comments from the last couple of meetings here and incorporate them into this CS. And I can go briefly through. I don't know if Representative Roker, you can fill in the blanks right.
Carry on, Mr. Chairman.
Leave off here. We eliminated R&D, research and development, from being creditable. We picked some geographic areas as we got input from DNR about which are known heavy oil fields, and we put those geographical areas in the bill. As far as who determines new areas, we tried to make everybody happy here with a procedure that DNR would move forward. If a new area was determined to be in heavy oil field, the leaseholder could approach DNR. DNR could make the determination, and then they would report that to Legislative Budget and Audit. You don't need the blessing of the legislature through LBNA, but you would have to report it to LBNA and also to the Department of Revenue. And the Department of Revenue in the CS, 30 days after they receive the technical information from DNR, they can move forward with the issuance of credit. No credit can be issued for any expenditure which is done within until DOR has had their 30-day window. The credit is not transferable. We've tightened up some of the language on qualified capital expenditure. We eliminated the alternate energy provision, which was the last section of the bill. And the thinking there in the last committee discussion that we had was that we didn't want to offer just to the oil industry the ability to get credits for wind farms while we might not offer it to their competitors if they so chose to do the same behavior. We left gas in. The testimony came from both DNR and from the engineers that we had testify that the almost by definition heavy oil does not have a lot of gas associated with it, so that the heavy oil technology would be used for heavy oil. Also not eligible for the credit would be exploration, so that if a company held a lease, they chose to go explore, they drilled the first well, they would have to provide that information, obviously, that they found in that first well to DNR to determine whether it was heavy oil or not. But the costs up to that point for the exploration would not be eligible for credit, only the development. We didn't want to have to go back and say yes now to credit because we have found that it is heavy oil. We drew the line in the sand and said only going forward. So with that, Representative Rokeberg, do you have any more thoughts to fill in? I do have Dan Seamount with AOGCC online, Mr. Bill Van Dyke with Oil and Gas, and we may be able to get somebody from the Department of Law and Department of Revenue. Ms. Wilson had a flight to catch, and I told her that she could leave. So teach me to be a nice guy. There'll be a question that won't answer. Do you want to finish up, Representative Rokeberg, on
yes, Mr. Chairman,
walking through the CS? I kind of hit the right, big points. We shortened it quite a bit. And then I've also got several amendments, some from Mr. Minns, the drafter, some from Mr. Van Dyke at DNR. Representative Seaton has an amendment, and we can get to those in just a second. Representative Rokeberg, did you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rokeberg, District 27. I want to thank you for spending the weekend with me and several other people, including Ms. Wilson. Mr. Van Dyke participated by teleconference. Mike Curley from ConocoPhillips. Several other people. What we tried to do is take the input from the committee as we best could gauge it, and from some of these other more professional folks, and incorporate it into this. We've created the light version of the bill, And then really is the difference, one of the key elements here is where we define everything as qualified development expenditures rather than the qualified capital expenditures. And as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, it's the development expenditure only. So we've narrowed the scope of the bill. And then, as you mentioned, we defined the existing formations, those pools of oil that are commonly understood to be heavy oil pools on the North Slope, and included them. One of the amendments that we have on the desk, which I would direct the committee's attention to, let's see, page 3, line 21, little I, for the definition of a challenged oil pool, are includes the Agnew or Schrader Bluff within the Poudre Bay unit or the Millie Point unit, except that portion of the pool of a pool in the Schrader Bluff formation producing from drill site S, and skipping down and then the West Sac Agnew within Kuparik, except those portions in the pool West Sac information produced from drill site 1C, 1D, E, and 1I, et cetera, and including the Lisburn. What we've done, Mr. Chairman, here is allow all the production within advice of Mr. Van Dyke, and without putting words in his mouth, we've received some emails on your desk, and there's an amendment on your desk that would actually remove those exceptions. And I certainly would like Mr. Van Dyke to speak to that at the appropriate time as another modification. So, and then we've allowed the ability in changing it to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, which you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, to make that future determination of any future areas that might qualify. So we've been as specific as possible to minimize the application and administration of this credit and let the future door open to encourage other companies to enter and develop formations on the North Slope or anywhere in Alaska, for that matter, that would qualify. So I think that we've done a pretty good job, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your efforts and the efforts of all the people in the department on putting this draft together. With a few tweaks, I think we've got a good piece of legislation. And I would reiterate my openness on the amount. It would be my desire, Mr. Chairman, to take up this measure, amend it as the committee sees fit, and try to move it up to finance because they're considering the markup on the main bill and to see whether they want to use this bill or not. One of my theories here was that there's some controversy about the 25% level credits on Senate Bill 305. It's conceivable, Mr. Chairman, if that comes into play and trying to put the final markup and draft together, that with this being more focused, they may want to look at substituting portions of this bill for the other bill, but that I just want to make sure that they have this as an alternative to discuss, and we can discuss within the House and the building. So, because this is a more of a rifle shop area at the area what we as the citizens of the state of Alaska want to develop, and not a broad-brushed, open-ended credit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I've been joined by Representative Capser and Ledoux also. Also, I'm sure that a lot of people heard the comments made by Mr. Van Meurs in the last couple of days, but I would concur with the Rules Chairman that if we get this to the next committee, we may be able to use some of the language, we may not. I wouldn't see this bill would pass as a standalone bill. You know,
not this year.
Not this year, and we'll see how it goes. I did not get a chance personally to meet with Dr. Van Meurs subject material. I heard just a bit of his comments on that press conference, and I wanted to question him more about the numbers he'd run at various levels. But I, for one, have no problem with getting this to the appropriate to the next committee and just kind of seeing.
Mr. Chairman, if I could,
Representative Roper,
I would point out in this whole area of competing experts and consultants on the letter received on 22 April of 06 from Mr. Daniel Johnston, one of our consultants. Point out on page 2 that he indicates a what I would call a glowing endorsement of the idea of having heavier challenged oil having a lesser having greater incentives towards Stewart. So we have the two with consultants that diametrically oppose, and my opinion, Mr. Johnston, went up significantly after I read his letter.
I'm going to leave that one lay. Okay, do we...
Did you get that, Judy?
First of all, just for clearing things up, is there anybody in the audience in the public that wishes to testify on this bill? Is there anybody online in the public that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, in case I didn't do that earlier, then public testimony is now closed on House Bill 498. With that, do you have questions, Representative Seaton, or do you want to start walking through these amendments that we have in front of us? Or?
Well, I had a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question on page 2 on line 19 where it says 30 days for notification to LBNA. Seems like these are longer time period projects than, you know, 30-day kind of time frame. Is that you feel that 30 days is enough time for notice to come from DNR to LBNA for there to really, if there's going to be any kind of challenge to that designation, that 30 days is sufficient?
I'll defer to the coach or the vice chairman of LBNA. I would say I would make one comment before I do that, is that I was involved with the original House Bill 207, which was the 180J changed into marginal oil field royalty relief 12 years ago. And one of the problems when we put that together and what we subsequently had to amend out was a rather cumbersome process that had legislative review as well as the governor's, a check on the governor. But subsequently, Representative Corning and I were able to fix that bill and put 180J back into effect about 3 years ago, which was the mechanism used by Pioneer to develop the Ugaruk field. And we narrowed down these reviews and this particular period is only the period of 30 days after there's the notice, and Representative Samuels actually fleshed out the entire period. I believe it's a six-month type period. Ralph, do you want to step them through this?
We, as the chairman of LBNA in the previous legislature, you're inundated. You are the repository of everything coming to the legislature, so the permanent funds audit came to me as the chairman, you know, and I read every word, of course. So I don't know, and I guess I could have a question for Mr. Van Dyke at DNR. Normally, how long would it take you if you got information on a drill core, a sample from industry, and they had applied to go designate one area as a heavy oil field? And I'd hate to ask this general question, but generally speaking, would it take DNR a week, a month, a year to go through the seismic data and the geological information that you get from the industry? How long would it take you to come up with a ruling on whether or not, your opinion, this was a heavy oil field or not?
Mr. Chairman, Bill Van Dyke with the Division of Oil and Gas. I guess, first off, I think it would probably be very unlikely that someone would even apply for the credit just from drilling one well. I mean, that could happen if it's one well that would expand the limits of an existing pool, but if it's a new pool, it's pretty unlikely that you would even think about, applying for a credit just having one well. It'd probably be a couple wells, and at that point, you know, you're building your information over time. I think the actual determination would probably just take a month or two, but I think you would have a fair amount of information on hand, and you'd sort of know where you were going to likely go with the decision even ahead of time, because you would have amassed, you know, a fair amount of information, considerably more than just from one well.
Okay, so as you get the information, what would be a timeline? You don't want to delay a project if you had somebody who's actually moving forward with something. And I guess it would depend on the time of year, but if you switch this time frame to where it would go to LBNA and you gave them 45 days or 60 days instead of the 30 days that we have in the bill currently, does it matter the time of year that they get the information? I mean, is it that time sensitive, or another couple of weeks is going to matter?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if I could interject right now, if I could direct the committee's attention to page 3, actually what's page 2, subsection F, starting on line 28, it goes over to page 3 where it says there's a six-month window in which the DNR has to make the determination after the application, just to clarify that point. Forgive me for interrupting, Mr. Chairman. So there's a 6 months, and that has to be approved by the DNR. Then the DNR sends it on to LBNA and the Department of Revenue before there's a chance for further.
What if we had the application also go to LBNA? That way you'd know 6 months in advance what they're working on. Now, since the application went, then everybody would just have access to the information.
Oh, just a copy of the application.
Yeah, a copy of the application. And that way, if the chairman of LBNA or the members of LBNA want to follow the process, they can. I'm telling you, you get inundated. You are the depository for every agency on the planet during the off season.
I don't think you want to do that, Mr. Chairman. You'd have a stack of technical data on your desk. I mean, they might just inform you that an application has been presented or something.
Mr. Van Dyke, how much of this information is confidential?
At the point in time where they're making the application, Mr. Chairman, I think probably most of it would be.
Okay, then let's skip that idea then. I interrupted Mr. Van Dyke, Mr. Chairman.
I rudely interrupted Mr. Van Dyke on whatever he was saying to make sure that the committee understood that there was a six-month period there. So,
as far as then we can, I don't know if you want to have an amendment when the time comes. If you want to go to 45 days, I don't have an opinion one way or another myself. So, is there any other comments on the CS as adopted? So let's move into the amendments. Tim, have these all been distributed in the packets?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I did have one question, and that was on page 4 under qualified development expenditures. It says a lease expenditure under 160, right. Primary purpose for challenged oil and qualified capital. And I just want to make sure, as the sponsor is... As this is constructed, they're all ands, right? In other words, it's...
Where are you, Paul?
On line 13 on page 4, where it says an expenditure that is a lease expenditure under 4355-160. I mean, we're not talking about ordinary operating costs, and I just wanted to make sure that that wasn't a opening. I wanted to make sure that those three, A, B, and C, were all ands. And is that your interpretation as well, that those are all ands and not?
Yeah, they're not disjunctive. And means all together.
I just wanted to make sure, Mr. Chairman, that we're not getting one of these things where we make a mistake and all of a sudden it's any lease expenditure. It's got to be a lease expender that's for challenge oil and also has to be a capital capitalized expenditure.
They're all conjunctive and they have to all apply, is my understanding. Ms. Wilson drafted this section.
Okay, Mr. Minge and Ms. Wilson are not here, but we will add the and.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, is there any other discussion on the draft? If not, let's move on to what is marked as amendment number 1. It's an email from Tim Benintendi. It's marked number 1, mints. And it is a technical amendment. Mr. Van Dyke, do you have a copy of this in front of you? What was marked as amendment number 1?
Mr. Chairman, no, we don't have copies of the amendments.
Okay, I'm going to take a brief Eddie's. Marked as amendment number 2. It is from page 3, line 25, starting the word accept. And it looks to me as though it is a conforming amendment also. Are you familiar with that email? Do you have that in front of you?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I have that email.
Okay, could you speak to that? We've got the middle paragraph is where you actually have the language. Could you speak to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And Bill Van Dyke with the Division of Oil and Gas. The idea behind this proposal was that if you're going to define viscous oil pools known in the known, the core area oil pools, if you're going to include the Prudhoe Bay Unit, Agnew and Schrader Bluff formations, and that would be on page 3, line 24, if those entire pools are going to be included, then I don't see really any justification to exclude the core areas in other oil pools. It's either all the core areas are included or all the core areas are excluded. Right now the bill is kind of a mix of the two ideas. Line 24 on page 3 includes the core areas in Prudhoe Bay, but then the rest of that paragraph lines 25 through 30 on page 3 exclude other core areas, and I just didn't see the logic to include some and exclude others. I believe they should be the core areas in those viscous oil pools should either be all in or all out, and at the end of the day, it's really a policy call for the legislature, you know, which way to go on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roper.
I have an email from Scott Daggert, dated April 25th, 06, that speaks to this point. Mr. Daggert had previously testified before the committee, I think on our first hearing. He's the subsurface team leader of the Western North Slope of the ACT performance team from BP, I believe. Right. Yeah, from BP. If I could have this submitted for the record, then he'd be in support of this amendment. Mr. Benettini, if you want to. It's a three-page email that explains some of the technical aspects about it. I think it would be helpful to have it in the record. And Mr. Chairman, if I'm right?
I want to make sure, Mr. Van Dyke, what we wanted to do is specifically say, we went through this weekend, specifically right. Say there are geographical areas. We wanted to eliminate those four drill sites and leave another one in. That was the specific intent of the CS.
Mr. Chairman, if I might remind the chairman, is that when we received the email from Mr. Van Dyke, if I'm not mistaken, it was before we had drafted up the CS. So we were working off that last email of his when we were putting the markup together. So if Mr. Van Dyke would verify this, I think that he had he agreed that removing them, given the way we redefined the eligible fields, was then appropriate after we had put the sideboards up by limiting the scope of the definition. Therefore, not making it necessary to accept those particular existing drill pads, because the credits would only be due on future development expenditures, not retrospective expenditures. And those are like projects in progress, so you don't want to. They're actually sinking money down those holes. You want to keep them doing that. So we don't want to disincent those and have them get a credit for a drill pad down the block, a new one, and when you couldn't get it on the current one they're working on to try to, because these are test pads. They're producing, but they want to make them produce more, and that's what they're working on. So he changed his mind.
Yeah, what we did is we included Orion and Polaris and excluded the drill sites.
That's right.
Because the drill sites were actually producing. Mr. Van Dyke?
Yes, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, we included Orion and Polaris.
That's correct. That's what it's written today.
And we excluded 1C, 1D, 1E, 1J.
And S.
And then there was one other. One
S and Schrader Bluff. I mean, Milne Point.
Because they're already producing, and that was kind of the middle ground that we tried to reach by including Orion and Polaris that are not producing currently.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bill Van Dyke again. I guess there are drill sites in Prudhoe Bay, in the viscous oil pools in Prudhoe Bay that are producing today. There's probably one or two drill sites yet to be built for viscous oil production in Prudhoe Bay, so it's Prudhoe Bay is a mix of, you know, some viscous oil production today, you know, quite a bit of production hopefully in the future, and I think the same could be said for Milne Point and Kaparik. But So Prudhoe, my email from last week had excluded, you know, some Prudhoe Bay viscous oil also, well, excluded most of it, and I think that's where the debate lies. It's hard to divide the Prudhoe Bay viscous oil pools by drill site.
Your email said accept the oil produced from those four drill sites, and you also wanted to exclude Orion and Polaris.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. My email from last week had the drill site area in Milne Point, drill site S, the Kaparik drill sites 1C, 1D, 1E, 1J, plus an area in Prudhoe Bay. And the CS adopted that idea for Milne Point and Kaparik, but not my suggestion for Prudhoe Bay. And I think it's, you know, I've also had some discussions with the Kaparik and Milne Point folks, and as my email from yesterday indicated, I think it, at the end of the day, it may be the better, the wiser choice to not exclude the areas in Milne and Kaparik, which would then include all the viscous pools in Prudhoe, Milne, and Kaparik. It gets pretty difficult to start carving out areas, and you end up with some disincentives rather than incentives.
Well, we can go back to your original view and take out Orion and Polaris, but we drafted the entire bill based on the conversation we had this weekend, and we took most of what you wanted, and we put Orion and Polaris there. So,
Mr. Chairman, again, at Prudhoe, you could name a couple drill sites in Prudhoe, and that would leave room for any new drill sites to earn credits, and that would be the way, I think, to approach Prudhoe Bay. If we're going to go the exclusion route, as the CS has written today, you would exclude, I think it's W and Z pad right now in Prudhoe.
And one other.
But if you're going to adopt the same strategy for Prudhoe Bay.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roethlisberger.
If I might indulge the committee and read one paragraph of Mr. Scott Dygert's email here, or direct the committee's attention to hand it out here. It says, for example, Milne S pad development was the first new pad designed specifically to develop the Shredded Bluff viscous resource in North Slope. Since the original development in 2002 and 03, we have continued to develop our understanding of viscous production. We are assessing further opportunities to improve recovery. These will likely include the sidetracking of several conventional vertical injectors to become horizontal injectors, and the drilling of several new producers and injectors to both infill existing water flood patterns and to target additional reservoir layers which have not been fully developed. These new wells would require a pad extension and additional surface facilities, requiring additional investment of $10 to $30 million. The project has not yet been sanctioned, in large part because it is very marginal and we are still looking at ways to reduce costs, improve recovery, or otherwise improve the economics. Basically, so that's part of the rationale, I think, that if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Van Dyke had subsequent conversations, we received this. And so I think there's a sound argument of not making a distinction about excluding those specific drill pads when, in fact, they're still under development.
Sound argument that possibly could have been made a week ago.
Yeah. It's a perfect world.
Well, do this all again tomorrow, too. Page 3, line 25. Okay. Move the amendment. Amendment number two is what is labeled.
Sure, I'll move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection to moving the exceptions for the drill site area S and the drill site areas 1C, D, E, and J?
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Gatto.
Just for clarity, you said it's labeled amendment number two?
It's It is labeled Amendment Number 2, Van Dyke.
It's actually on the next page.
Conceptual Amendment Number 2.
Yes. And it's clear on the page, on the second page of the amendment, it is clearer.
So the amendment is Conceptual Amendment Number 2, and it's labeled as S.1?
Yes. Is there any objection to Conceptual Amendment Number 2, S.1? Hearing none, it passes. Back to, have we, Mr. Van Dyke, have you gotten what is labeled Amendment Number 1, Mints?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And do you have any comments on that? It looked to be like a technical definition to me on the methodology. It is page 3, line 20. I just wanted to get your take on that.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with your characterization of the proposed amendment.
Okay. A motion to accept Conceptual Amendment Number 1. S.2 on page 2 of Amendment Number 1. You're going to accept Reg. Method.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move it. I don't quite understand it, but I'll move it.
Mr. Van Dyke, you want to explain maybe the regs that you would be implementing or that the commissioner would be implementing? Explain maybe the technical changes being adopted?
Mr. Chairman, I think like or similar to a regulation that would state how you would determine API gravity for a pool, this would be similar. You would determine permeability for the entire volume of the reservoir. You would it would be some sort of a volume-weighted calculation because we recognize that the permeability in one part of the reservoir, whether it's the top or the bottom of the reservoir or the east end or the west end, permeability is going to differ across the reservoir, throughout the reservoir, so you want some way to come up with an average for the entire bulk rock.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Ms. Van Dyke. Is this for the other section of challenged oil? I mean, is that the idea here, not talking about the heaviness, but how to get it through the rock? Is that what we're talking about?
Through the chair, that's correct. This would be the part of the bill that uses permeability as one of the parameters to define challenged oil.
Okay. Is there any objection to Conceptual Amendment Number 1? Hearing none, Amendment Number 1 passes. Moving on to Amendment Number 3, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 3.
And I will object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment Number 3 is getting to the idea we were talking about before about having some price guideline, and Amendment Number 3 puts that in at, as it stands right now in this amendment, ANS West Coast $50, and it's a look-back period. The credits would be applied for just as in the bill, or they could be delayed, and then at the end of the 10-year period, you'd look at the average price of the oil, and if it had exceeded that price cap, then the company would repay the state for the credit because it wouldn't have been really needed because it would have been at a price level it was economic to develop. So basically it's guaranteeing the one of two things to the oil companies. The prices will either exceed a certain amount or you get the 15% credit. And
any questions on Amendment 3? Did you have a change this?
Or? Yes, I did have a change. And I'm not sure which. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'd conceptually change from the price of Alaska North Slope West Coast to average price at point of production.
Okay, change it
and
from the ANS.
And that's on page 1, page 8, from ANS West Coast to average price at point of production.
Do we understand that you're changing it to the price at the point of production, and do you still want to take a brief Eddie's.
Is it?
$50 for Mike's. When we were off record, was I don't know what that does, point of production does to the price. So if you want to set a price of 50 and you're backing out the cost, then it wouldn't be 50 anymore. But we understand the concern.
Okay.
I'm done. I've got it.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to let finance look at that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Are there any other comments on amendment number three? Is there any objection to amendment number three?
Did you, Mr. Chairman, did you want to?
Broker.
I was going to direct a question to Representative Seaton if he were going to contemplate adjusting the price, or do you want to leave the whole concept to the next step?
I think we'll leave the concept where it is for finance. We were talking about there was a suggestion from some of the companies that we go to a inflation-proofed, and I think it complicates everything, and so.
And I just don't know what going to point of production.
Right.
I understand the concept, but now the, as long as we're all on board, we know.
Okay. Yeah, there's a relationship between that price and adjusting it and where you count it, because you need to know what the actual cost is, and I don't disagree with that.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes, for
my feeling is if this is going to get incorporated to PPP, we've developed those ideas, and when they're doing it, they can
adjust
that.
Got to conform with the accounting method, right?
And we would probably also have Ms. Wilson or Mr. Dickinson take a look and make sure that the methodology conforms also. I think we got the concept down, what we're looking for.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, Ms. Wilson, I did.
Get this by her?
Yep.
Okay. Is there any objection to number three?
Just for discussion. See under amendment three, it says on line 20.
Page?
One. It says may defer using the credit till after April 30th, 2016. And then in the bill, it says on page 2, line 6, it says shall calculate and apply every month. Is it going to conflict there that, I mean, or is
that
the intent?
I would say conforming language can put in there to make sure that this, well.
It is the intent.
Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 2, line 1 of the bill, it says the producer makes an election under there. So I think that, you know, if the producer doesn't make the producer can makes an election for tax credit, and then they can either amortize it or take it the other. And what we've done is said you can put it off to the end, to the sunset time, if you desire. I presume that most would take it as they incur the expenses, but some companies may be in a position they want to put it off to the end.
Chairman?
Yes, Representative Roper.
I understand that under the amendment before us, it'd have to be a true-up period, but that's why, for this to work, there's basically a cap on the credit. So if the price of oil exceeds $50, then there's no credit.
I just wondered if we had the
agreement. That's
there.
That's a very good point, but I mean, presumably it would cease that period, so they'd have to adjust any credit either on a monthly or on a 10-year true-up basis, or however the regs would require it.
Mr. Chairman, this is Rob Mintz. I just want to let you know I'm on the line.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Mintz.
Yeah. And I could comment on that point that was raised, Mr. Chairman.
We'd love to hear from you.
All right. I mean, it is a good point, and I wondered about this and discussed it with our text editor in the legislation section, and our thought was that line 12 on page 1, where it says a credit under this subsection is subject to the provisions of G to J, would basically tell you that that where subsection B says that you shall take a credit every month, that wouldn't apply if you were deferring it. However, it would be possible to even make that, you know, more explicit if the committee is concerned.
Well, if the amendment passes, then we can pass it as a conceptual amendment, and we'll have that conforming language put in there to make sure that it flows okay.
That's perfectly agreeable to make a conceptual amendment.
Is that all right? Okay. Is there any, I'll remove my opposition to Amendment Number 3. Is there any other? Okay, none. Amendment Number 3 passes. Thank you very much, Mr. Minns, for that. Amendment Number 4 is not going to be offered. Amendment Number 5, and once again, it's a mail from Tim Benintendi. It's marked Number 5, Minns. And on page 4, line 20, it appears that there was an error. And if you can read that, it's the person encouraging the producer. Yeah, okay, obviously.
So, Mr. Chairman,
you want to move that amendment, change producer to expenditure?
Yes, I'll move the amendment to page 4, line 20, changing the word producer and substituting expenditure.
Okay, is there any opposition to that? Hearing none, Amendment Number 5 passes. And Mr. Minns, there was a question, since we've got you, on page 4, line 13, it says A. Do we need to put an and after the AS4355160 to make sure that we include all three of these, or is that implied? More of a drafting question, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm looking at the same place you're talking about, there is an and after at the end of line 15.
Right.
Correct. So that's implied then that there's an and at the line 13 also?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, because it's basically read as if it's a sentence with three parts.
Thank you very much. That's all I needed to hear. And with that, did you want to move this to 45 days? That was the only other question that we had left.
Yes, I'd move that we change page 2, line 19 from 30 days to 45 days.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Representative Roachberg. I'll object. Representative Roachberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to say that I see no purpose in allowing a piece of paper to sit on the desk of LBNA another 15 days. Unread. I mean, really, quite frankly.
Line I never read every report.
Sooner than.
That only gives a 7-month period before you can get a project going even from your point of application. So. I don't see any real need for that addition.
The only
currently, I think in the 180J provisions, it's not. There are some even 10-day triggers in there. So
the point of the giving it to LBNA in general was so that if the legislature had a voice, and if you're during session, it's easy because then you get it. You can call a meeting. But during the interim, sometimes it is very difficult to even get six members. Committee together. Mm-hmm. By the time that you got something, you read it, you understood it on day one, it would still take you 2 weeks to get a quorum together if you wanted to have a hearing or take action. So it depends on the time of year. During the session, I can call a meeting tomorrow. During the interim, sometimes I literally go six weeks. You call everybody, they call back. Nobody's here. So. I don't have any problem with the extension. I understand your concern. You'd hate to push a year. You hate to push a year's a project off the table because you miss it by 3 days. That's not the intent.
Mr. Chairman, I think one thing you might want to consider is I think the major thing and what people, some other further public notice, because what happens if somebody lights a fire under the chairman of LBNA, you may have a meeting if there's a real need to have one. If not, then it becomes a non-event. Yeah. We wouldn't have a meeting. So that's the type of thing that usually politicians, it's been my experience, will react to somebody bringing it to their attention, not just receiving a pro forma piece of notification.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess that I'm not exactly sure in which form the Department of Natural Resources would supply you the notice. I presume that notice of determination would go out a little broader than just to the chairman of LBNA. I may be mistaken there, but I think that it should be a little broader distribution so that LBNA has time to act. And most of these projects are longer term. I mean, they're not that I've seen and what people have told me is these are take a while, you get delineation, you know, you've got to put forward a project even, and get it sanctioned even after you have a pool delineated, so I'm not, or after you've applied for it, because you probably won't get a project sanctioned before you know whether you even have a heavy oil deposit that's going to be sanctioned as a new area, so.
Mr. Hurley?
Yes.
You mind answering a question? I saw you sitting there and I couldn't resist.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. As your company goes and you're looking at a project, if you had a well bored, you thought it was heavy oil, you dug in, you've got your testing done, there's no credits allowed for that, you get the information to DNR, what's your process? And I assume you still have to go to your board of directors to get project sanctions. You're still going to have a lot of engineering work. It's kind of a moot point whether there's 30 or 45 days in your scheme of things. It's not like we're going to push something off the table. That's my understanding of it. Is that an accurate depiction?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Michael Hurley with ConocoPhillips. Yes, it is. It's going to take a while to do a project.
Okay.
And it's going to take a while to get a lot of the stuff that we need to get done. It's always painful to think about paper sitting on somebody's desk for longer periods of time, but it's going to take a while to get things done for a new pool. And this is where we're talking strictly about a brand new pool, not some development that we're working in already that's covered under the existing statutes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to put you on the spot. Seat, I don't care one way or another. If you want to offer the amendment, we can.
Yes, I did offer the amendment.
Okay. Is there an objection to switch it to 45 days? Hearing none, is it 45 days? So as amended, I believe that's the last amendment. Are there any other amendments? Discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Seat.
I'd move CS for 498 as amended. The individual recommendations, and I'm not sure if we have any fiscal impact.
Oh, I think there's
and with any attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Is there any objection to moving the bill forward?
We do.
Hearing none, the move bills forward. Representative Elkins, I believe your bills you wanted to.
Yeah, we pulled it after we had the big discussion in here, and they came to my office 2 days later and decided that they would lease. So.
Okay. Problem got solved. We may hear the wanton waste bill again. I haven't had a chance to do some homework on that, but other than that, I don't believe we have Michael Flint Hills. Okay, Flint Hills, the House Bill 503 will be on Monday. So with that, we're adjourned.
Mr. Chairman.